going to start with a public hearing on House Bill 2468. Representative Burley, if you would. And Representative Holvey was going to be here, too, I thought.
Yes, I thought so, too.
But,
let me do my blurb.
You want me to wait a little bit? I've got some time.
Let's go.
All right.
Yes, sir, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2468 eliminates requirement that proposed forest legacy land area be wholly within an urban growth boundary, requires the Department of Forestry to ensure that implementation of the Federal Forest Legacy Program complies with all land use laws and regulations. And for the record, we've received two letters in support, one from Council President David Bragdon from Metro and Nan Evans from the Nature Conservancy.
Representative Holvey, why don't you come on up and join your colleague?
Hey, Chuck, how you doing?
Good. You're both here for 2468, right?
Correct.
All right. Welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
You ready?
Okay.
Well, thank you.
First term.
Thank you, Senator. Members of the committee, Representative Chuck Burley, House District 54. And, of course, I'm here in support of the bill, and I'd like to start with just a couple of statistics here. Nationwide, forest land per capita has declined by over half, from about an average of 5 acres to less than 2.7 acres per person. From 1992 to 1997, we've seen on average each year about 1 million acres of private forest land lost to development. And I think, you know, here in Oregon, we see the potential for this happening with the change in some of these large industrial forest land ownerships. And we as Oregonians stake great importance in our forests. The Forest Legacy Program was established by Congress in 1990 to promote the long-term integrity of forest lands. Secretary of Agriculture was directed to cooperate with state, regional, and other units of government and is authorized in cooperation with these parties to acquire lands and interests in lands in perpetuity for inclusion in the Forest Legacy Program. Landowner participation in forest legacy, including the sale of lands and interest in lands, is entirely voluntary. The program is implemented through state participation consistent with national guidelines and as described in a state assessment of need. The assessment of need identifies and works to protect environmentally important private forest lands that are threatened by conversion to non-forest uses and provides the opportunity for continuation of traditional forest uses such as timber management activities and outdoor recreation. So, for example, under an easement, a forest land owner may receive fair market value for certain development rights, and in this instance, the ownership would stay in private hands, but rights to further divide and or develop are foregone. The Forest Legacy Program has broad-based and encompassing conservation goals. The program acknowledges that forest land is critical for a number of important economic, environmental, and social roles, and thus the program supports a range of traditional forest uses such as timber management, recreation, research, economic infrastructure, and education. As a result, the program can be used to protect various kinds of work in forest lands, assuring that the forest will be there for future generations. I'll stop at that and allow my colleague to offer his comments, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative. State Representative Paul Holvey for the record, District 8. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee, for hearing this bill. And I provided written testimony, which I won't read because he's already provided the first half of it. But I will add a couple of pieces. I think they're important. I worked pretty hard last session on this bill on the House side, along with Representative Burley. And this bill basically just, I think, enhances the bill that we passed last session. The legislation that was passed last session contained a restriction requiring Forest Legacy Program be limited to properties wholly within the urban growth boundaries. And this restriction excludes almost all forest properties that would normally be considered in the program. It also could have the adverse impact of diminishing the amount of buildable land inside our urban growth boundaries. So House Bill 2468 removes this restriction and allows Oregon to fully participate in every aspect of the Forest Legacy Program. The program, as Representative Burley's described, it provides opportunities protecting forests for industry, recreation, environmental, and other forest uses. And I think it really is a great program that in our post-Measure 37 Oregon really is going to provide the ability for us to step in a limited amount of cases, perhaps, because there's not a tremendous amount of money that we can do a lot with it, but we can certainly take a look at some real critical forests and set them aside for either timber production or conservation or whatever the use is approved by our assessment of need in the Department of Forestry. So I think this is really a good bill that people from both sides of the aisle can get behind. Really important, and I know you're all probably familiar with this bill from many sessions of work by others than us, and I appreciate your consideration of it, and I urge you to send it on to the governor's office at some point.
Any questions? Senator Bates.
Thank you. Just real quickly, first off, what a difference a day makes. I know you fought for this bill last session, and I fought with you for it. And what we had to put into it as a compromise to get it across the floor was what you're taking out, basically. My memory of this is any willing seller type of bill. And especially for Eastern Oregon, correct me if I'm wrong, where much of our land is going to be soon logged off and then tied up for residential developments or whatever kind of development might be occurring, this allows those lands to stay permanently in forest land for production. And I assume this will come under the Forest Act as far as how that cut's occurring. Is that correct, too?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, that is correct. The and a good example, and I don't have any maps or pictures with me, but the 33,000-acre... what was known as the Bull Springs Tree Farm that used to be last ownership was Crown Pacific, and then when they went bankrupt, it became Cascade Timberlands, which is the holding company. And the Deschutes Basin Land Trust is currently in the process of negotiating with the owners of that property now to acquire it under the Community Forest Authority Bill that we passed last session. And the Forest Legacy Program could be very helpful in an acquisition such as this, because these 33,000 acres are contiguous to the city of Bend, and you can imagine the higher and better value of those properties than to keep it in a working forest condition. So to be able to buy down those development rights, we need some conservation equity, and one of the ways that we could do that would be through the Forest Legacy Program if this bill were to be enacted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. And Mr. Chair, I just might add in my testimony, I also, you know, bring out that, you know, there is approximately $61.5 million in allocations for 2007, and you know, the state of Washington has participated in this program for many years, and they've set aside a tremendous amount of property for timber production, primarily, and a little bit for environmental conservation. But, you know, this program has a lot of different uses, and it fits with other programs, and, you know, it's just really something we shouldn't be putting limits on as far as how we use it. And we should be able to take a look at the program and use it where it's appropriate for the purposes that we see fit. So.
Very good. Thank you, Representatives.
Thank you.
Ted Lawrenson, Sarah Vickerman.
And members of the committee, I'm Ted Lawrence, an assistant state forester with the Oregon Department of Forestry. I think the two representatives said it well, so I'm not going to provide a whole lot of testimony here. But the passage of the bill will increase the forest land eligible to participate in the program. This change in scope will result in us developing a new revised assessment of need and developing procedures to ensure compliance with state agency coordination requirements, that is, compliance with the land use program, to make sure we're not having unintended consequences around that. The assessment of need will be completed in partnership with interested agencies, organizations, and the public to ensure that we look at all forest land that may be threatened to conversion. The cost of this assessment will be covered by a federal grant, and I would make the point this program is very competitive nationally, and having this broadened scope will actually allow Oregon to compete better for those limited funds, so I think the scope increase is going to be useful for that. I would make the point, in terms of the federal budget, the actual dollar amounts for legacy appears to be quite a bit less in the current proposed president's budget, about half of what it's been in the past year. So, again, while we are increasing the scope, the availability of funds is going to be quite reduced, I would suspect.
Very good.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Sarah Vickerman, the director of the Northwest Office for Defenders of Wildlife. We've been working with the department and with other parties for a number of years trying to get this legacy program off the ground in Oregon, and we're pleased to see you considering this change to the bill that was passed last year. It never made any sense to us to limit the application of the program to lands within the urban growth boundary. Obviously, it has a broader, potentially a much broader application, and that the most cost-effective lands to either put under easement or purchase through Forest Legacy would not be lands within urban growth boundaries, but probably lands elsewhere, typically. So I guess the one thing I would say that perhaps hasn't been mentioned, although Ted alluded to it in his reference to the president's budget, is that while the purposes may be consistent with the idea of keeping large tracts of forest land and forest uses, there really isn't going to be enough money to do that directly, particularly for these large ownerships in eastern Oregon that are threatened with conversion. But what it can do is leverage investments from other sources where local communities or conservation groups or other folks are interested in working with the department and with the legacy program to leverage those funds with other sources. It can be really important as a source of partial funding for some of these pieces of property that really are threatened, particularly with some of them with Measure 37 claims. So we appreciate you hearing the bill. We support it completely and urge you to pass it.
Thanks, Ms. Vickerman. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you both very much. Eric Wold and Amanda Rich.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Eric Wold. I am the Natural Resources Manager for the City of Eugene, and I'm here on behalf of the city to fully support this bill. The city has been interested in and involved with the Forest Legacy Program since the first assessment of need was developed 5 or 6 years ago, and the city and several property owners around the city were very engaged in having a successful proposal to get funding when the first round of funding was announced. Due to the UGB restriction that was ultimately in place, the city was successful in getting funding for this current fiscal year for one parcel inside the UGB. However, that's about the only parcel that we think would be eligible within our UGB. However, we have a lot of parcels outside the UGB where private landowners have contacted us expressing their interest in working with the city to protect their lands for continued forest uses. The city is fortunate that we have a recently passed bond measure of about $28 million, some of which goes for acquisition of forest lands to keep them in forested uses. And the Forest Legacy Program would very much help us implement that long-term goal that the city has, working with our regional partners, including the county, to create an open space system that has representative habitat types, such as the forested timberlands. So, again, in the face of, as other people have mentioned, in the face of intense pressure for rural residential development, the Forest Legacy Program is a really important source of funding for private landowners who are voluntarily wanting to join the program to protect their forests and keep it in forest production.
Very good. Thank you. Ms. Rich?
Chair Vaki and members of the committee, my name is Amanda Rich, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Recreation and Park Association. And you've heard some really wonderful testimony from the folks that have gone before me, so I won't repeat. But I would say we really very much appreciate the efforts of the folks who pushed this bill through last session, and we appreciate your hearing this today, and hope that you'll move it forward. We have unanimous support among our members for this bill.
Thank you. Committee, any questions? Seeing none, thank you both very much. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2468. I'm going to open the work session 2468. If I could have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2468 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson moves House Bill 2468 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Committee, any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you. I will vote against the motion. The last couple of speakers, I guess, pretty well identified why I'm opposed to the motion. The first assessment of need done in the state of Oregon showed that we don't have a problem with commercial forests. The problem is with urban forests. And that is where the only conversion in Oregon has been happening, is in the urban forests, not in the quote-unquote commercial forests. What the people who want this program have always wanted to do is use the Forest Legacy Program to create city parks. That's why last session the UGB restriction was put in order to keep them inside the urban growth boundaries. Now they want to expand just outside the urban growth boundaries to get more parks. If cities want to create parks, I'm all for it. But they shouldn't be using our federal tax dollars to do that.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, any objections?
Besides mine?
That would be Senator Beyer. With that, the motion carries. Senator Bates, you'll carry the bill on the floor.
Thank you.
And I will close the work session on House Bill 2468, and the committee will stand at ease for just a couple minutes.
Right, yeah. We are back from recess.
Pull up, puppy from committee, right?
And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2293.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2293A modifies the Forest Resource Program Trust Statutes, establishes a voluntary cost share program, and outlines purpose of program, establishes a voluntary loan program to finance stands of trees and improved management of qualified private and local government forest lands. It outlines the priorities and structure of the loan program, requires the Department of Forestry to educate and provide technical assistance to landowners regarding forest resource trust programs.
Mike Caffaretta and Sarah Vickerman.
Go ahead, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Fire and members of the Senate Environment Natural Resources Committee.
It pained you to say that, didn't it?
Yep. I'm not sure this process. A little switcheroo there. I'm not sure how it works, but I can be adaptable. My name is Mike Caffaret. I work with the Oregon Department of Forestry. I'm the Policy Unit Manager here in Salem. I'm here today to provide testimony in support of House Bill 2293. So this bill proposes changes to an existing program that the Department of Forestry has called the Forest Resource Trust. The purpose of the Forest Resource Trust is to provide financial, tactical, and related assistance to county forest landowners for stand establishment and improved management of forest lands. And currently, the program is used as a loan program. So if a landowner has underproductive forest land, maybe it's been farmland that the farmer no longer wants to farm, or maybe it was run with cattle, cleared a forest originally and then run with cattle, and then the farmer has decided not to do that. Or for a variety of circumstances now, maybe either an invasive species or a brush patch, and they want to convert it to forest land, but it's very expensive, and the landowner doesn't have the capital to do that. And so this is this program, the landowner has the land, and the state provides funds, and they would reforest that and turn it into forest land. So in the long run, the landowner gets to further their objectives and gets some financial return, and the state gets the logs that come off of that eventually and gets paid back, as well as all the other things that the other benefits the forests provide. So it's a win for landowner and for the state. The model has not worked well. It's cumbersome to have a loan from the state of Oregon, and many landowners are hesitant to go into that program. And we recognize it's been cumbersome. We convened an advisory group of landowners and consulting foresters, environmental community, others knowledgeable about this kind of thing. And they had a variety of suggestions for us to improve that. Some of those we made through administrative rule and have completed those changes, and some of those were legislative needed changes, and that's House Bill 2293. Preseason filed through the governor's office and the Board of Forestry, supported it, and then through the House as 2293 with amendments. What you have in front of you now, basically two things I'd like to point out. It gives the Board of Forestry the authority to generalize the Forest Resource Trust Voluntary Loan Program to be inclusive of other forest management practices besides stand establishment. So maybe the landowner tried to reforest, got partway there, they cleared the brush, maybe planted trees, but the trees need to be maintained, and they run out of capital, so we could help them in that kind of way. The second thing this does, it gives the Board of Forestry the authority to create a voluntary cost share program under the Forest Resource Trust. So a cost share, a lot of landowners are really familiar with that. So it's easier to administer. It's a proven way of delivering technical assistance to financial need. And so the landowner provides some of the funds from their own private funds, and we help them in some way through some funding and technical assistance to get them all the way there. There's other variety of technical adjustments that are made through this, and they're in your write-up there. So I just, in closing, we support House Bill 2293, and we urge you to consider it. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Any questions? My only first question, I guess, would be how many lands are currently in the old program where the state owns, quote-unquote, the timber, and is it growing for future harvest?
Yeah, Senator Beyer, there's about 900 acres. And it's, you know, the state loans them the money, so when they harvest the timber, they pay back the loan. So there's, I wouldn't quite say the state owns the timber. I think they have an interest in the timber, and the private landowner still has a financial interest as well.
Is this going to, this bill in any way going to change that arrangement with those, that 900 acres and the landowners that currently have it?
No, I don't believe so. So, but they can still have that same, a new landowner could have the same deal that the old landowners had, or there'd be other ways to expand the program. But that same structure still exists under the new program. There's a loan program and a cost share now instead of just a loan program.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I really appreciate you scheduling these two bills back to back. It saved me a trip to Salem twice.
Well, I had nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Welcome anyway.
I'm Sarah Vickerman. I'm director of the Northwest Office for Defenders of Wildlife. We support the version of 2293 that's before you today. As written, this bill will streamline the administration of the Forest Resource Trust program, as Mike explained, so that it should be more appealing to landowners, we hope, and address a broader spectrum of activities to improve the management of Oregon's forest lands. I've been a member of the Oregon Forest Trust Advisory Committee for some time and participated in the development of the original bill, and then when a work group was formed to consider amendments to the bill over on the House side, I was also in the work group, as Gina LaRocco from my staff was, and we helped craft the amendments to the original bill. Our particular interest in this, in addition to streamlining the administration and all of that, is that it appropriately sets the stage for the Oregon Department of Forestry to assist landowners in securing payments for ecosystem services to supplement the revenue that's derived from the sale of forest products, tax deferrals, and other traditional incentive-based programs from state, federal agencies, and other sources. We're hoping that it will have the effect of opening a dialogue among the agencies, the policymakers, stakeholders, concerning the appropriate role of the government and the private sector in providing these public benefits, such as carbon sequestration, protection of fish and wildlife habitat, clean and abundant water, and other values. At the same time, the bill as written doesn't prematurely define a controlling role for the agency in brokering trades between buyers and sellers of ecosystem services. We think that defining these specific roles in the emerging markets is going to require careful coordination and integration across sectors and land ownerships to ensure a credible and efficient system of exchange. So we see great potential for properly structured and managed ecosystem service markets to address ecological and economic challenges in a manner more strategic and effective than the current system. And we're not proposing that these markets replace existing tools but supplement them. And that we see 2293 being a real important step in that direction.
Thank you. Any questions? Mr. Chair, I don't quite understand the process here, so I apologize. But as I understand, you make a loan for developing the forest. Is that loan to be paid on an annual basis, interest only, or is it all at the end when you actually do the harvest? There's no cost to the landowner potentially until that happens, which leads to the questions of what happens if you have a fire, what happens if you have insect damage, what happens if ownership of the land changes. Who decides when the cut occurs, how much the cut is, how the cut occurs? I mean, those must, if I'm understanding this right, those issues must be, you must have addressed or thought about them. Could you, I mean, I'm going to have to sell this to my caucus, so could you give me a little more information here?
Yes.
That one's yours. We didn't talk about
it. This is the things off the top of my head I'm thinking about, wondering, is this, are these germane questions?
Very much so, Senator Beyer, Senator Bates. All those have been worked out in the existing program and a long set of administrative rules to do that. But basically, yeah, it's a loan to the landowner, and it's paid back at harvest. And the state takes on the risk of fire or insect. So the private landowner doesn't have that risk through this loan program. If those things come along and the timber burns up, the landowner is back where they were started from with a field, no trees. Other part of your question there, please.
Hold up, Mr. Chair. Yes, go ahead. The other question was, who decides when the harvest occurs? Is that part of the contract originally? How much is harvested, and what kind of technique or logging techniques are used for doing the cut? I
mean, those are all landowner decisions, right?
Yeah, Senator Beyer, Senator Bates. Those are landowner decisions, when to harvest and how much to harvest and what method. It's just when they have income off the land, it pays back the loan. And the loan runs with the land, which is in large part one of the big barriers to a loan program like that. There is a buyout clause as well, so folks can buy out of it down the road if they want to.
Thank you. Let's make notes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
You're welcome. A couple of the questions. And under current law, you do have a $100,000 per landowner, I think, limitation on it. Is that correct? And that's been removed, I see, by this bill. So is it replaced somewhere else in the bill I haven't caught yet for a limit any one landowner could get in a two-year period?
Senator Beyer, I can't recall how we dealt with that particular thing through the process. We don't have a lot of land of that size going through this program, so I'd have to get back to you with the information on that.
Okay. The other question I would have is, there was a goal in the first program. Obviously, that wasn't met. Was that goal revisited or re-put in someplace else?
No, I think we just took the goal out. It was pretty optimistic, if I remember correctly.
Okay. And I'm speaking about the language that's being removed in page 2 of the bill, line 16 and 17. The goal was to get 250,000 acres in by 2010. So far, we're only about 249,000 short, so we can be good on that.
If I could, Senator Beyer, this was envisioned originally as sort of like the Tillamook State Forest, that you had all these lands that were deforested, and without the money to reforest them, the state reforested them. Now it's this great asset. And the idea was that in this one, the Resource Trust, there's 200,000 acres or 250,000 across the state of private lands in underproductive capacity. And so through this program, you can reforest all those. Some of the Tillamook that's more dispersed, you have this great asset for the state and for the landowners.
Like other programs, it tends to be resource dependent, though, and so the majority of the funding in recent years has come from the Oregon Climate Trust as a carbon offset through the Klamath Cogeneration Facility. So it was carbon offset money that was used to pay for the reforestation in the recent years. Didn't the state appropriated some money initially, though, right?
That's correct. Originally, it was a state appropriation, and now the current funding is through the Klamath Cogen Project.
Okay, so if this program was to be wildly successful with these changes, and we got that 249,000 acres to come in the next biennia, is there that kind of funds in this carbon sequestration account that would cover it?
No, there's about $1.5 million in the Klamath Cogen Fund. If we had Ryan Lambert wanting to sign up, we would run through that money, and then we'd be looking for other sources. And if we found other sources, then we would use them.
The good news is that there may be additional money for carbon offsets because of cap and trade systems that are developing elsewhere.
Okay. Any other questions?
There's one last question. Does this apply to, like, smaller acreages, 8, 10, 20, 30, 40 acres, or if individual landlords who are doing something else with land right now decide to convert to forest land, that they can apply for this and convert to forest land instead of having pasture or whatever else they're using the land for?
That's correct, Senator Byer, Senator Bates. They could do that. Usually they are smaller acreages. I believe there's a 10-acre minimum size, so it would be larger than 10 acres.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, thank you very much. You guys comfortable with the bill? Bates?
I'll be glad to.
I think Senator Tomaszewski is just in the hallway, so I'll have to go get him.
Sure. Close the public. Oh, first, before we do that, is there anyone else who wishes to testify on the bill? Seeing no one, close the public hearing. Open a work session on House Bill 2293.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 2293 to the floor if you do pass recommendation.
Senator Atkins has moved House Bill 2293 to the Senate floor if they do pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Objections? Seeing none. So ordered, and we did it without Senator Podansky. Senator Atkins, you want to carry that?
Be delighted.
Senator.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Well, it's okay.
We're all through now.
Yeah. Senator Atkins will be the carrier.
Sorry.
Close the work session if I haven't already. Open a work session on House Bill, excuse me, open a public hearing on House Bill 2992. Ms. Marshall.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2992A allows the division of a lot or parcel in forest zone or mixed farm and forest zone into two parcels if one parcel is to be sold to provider of public parks or open space or not-for-profit land conservation organization and the remaining parcel is large enough to support a dwelling. Oh, and for the record, we received a letter from the Nature Conservancy in support of this measure.
Okay. Ray Wilkinson, Esther, is it Lev? And Patty Case? So you want to come up with a panel, so I hope that was the case. Sometimes. Who wants to go first?
I'll start, Mr. Chairman. Ray Wilkinson, Oregon Forest Industries Council, and I'm here mainly to introduce the other two members of this panel, and that would be Esther Lev with the Wetlands Conservancy and Patty Case with Green Diamond Resource Company, formerly known as Simpson Timber Company and a longstanding member of OFIC, which is OFIC's interest in this bill. And these are two folks who you don't normally see sitting at the same panel together, and this is somewhat of an unusual alliance here. But this bill is a tweak to the land use laws that's necessary as the final piece to consummate a transaction between Green Diamond Resource Company and the Wetlands Conservancy relating to about a 500-acre property of salt marsh timberland mix in the Aquinnah Bay estuary. And the handout that we provided has a map and an aerial photo that gives you a pretty good idea of what we're talking about here. And with that, I'll let the other two members of the panel testify on the bill also.
Thank you, Ray. Mr. Chair and committee members, is a picture is worth a thousand words. So if you look at the picture in that packet you just got, this is what we're talking about protecting. And 4 years ago, the Wetlands Conservancy partnered with Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board and submitted a $1 million grant to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Coastal Fund. That grant rated fifth in the nation, and for a very good reason. It is Aquinnah, and there was more than six applicants for that. Those fundings, they're pretty competitive. But Aquinnah Estuary is one of the most biodiverse areas left in the state of Oregon. It supports seven species of threatened salmonid species, numerous threatened bird species, and it's just a very important area. So after we received that grant, we went through a prioritization and found these estuary areas that we are more interested in acquiring that were owned by, at the time, Simpson Timber, but we've been working on this so long that they've changed company names and are now Green Diamond Resources Company. And what this bill will allow is for the conservation of ecologically important salt marsh areas, including a forested buffer zone, leaving adjacent uplands available for continued production of commercial timber. The bill will do to forest and mixed farm forest zones the same eligibility that has been given for division that's currently allowed for farm zones. It was supported by both coastal senators, Senator Verger and Senator Johnson, and that it's been a partnership between Green Diamond as well as Lincoln County Commissioners, the Lincoln County Planning Department, as well as Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development.
Chairman Beyer, members of the committee, I'm Patty Case, Public and Regulatory Affairs Manager for Green Diamond Resource Company. As Ray said, you may know us as Simpson Timber Company. Though our name's changed, we've been involved in forest management in the Pacific Northwest since 1890. We own 120,000 acres in Tillamook and Lincoln counties. I'm testifying in support of House Bill 2992. Green Diamond, as you've heard, has been working for some time to sell approximately 400 acres of property along the Yuquina River to the Wetlands Conservancy. To us, organizations such as the Wetlands Conservancy provide a market solution to conservation of important properties such as this. I've provided a map in your packet that shows each of the five parcels involved in this transaction. The area has prime habitat for salmon, steelhead, trout, eagles, murrelets, big game, and numerous waterfowl, as well as contributing to the overall health of the Yuquina Bay and river. Passage of House Bill 2992 would help ensure a successful transaction by providing for division of 80-acre parcels for conservation purposes while still maintaining some flexibility to manage the remaining portion of the divided property for long-term working forests. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just was asked and reminded, did you both state your name before your testimony?
I did. I don't believe.
I'm Esther Lev of the Wetlands Conservancy.
Thank you very much. Questions? My first one is, how is this bill limited to that property only? Because I don't understand how that works. Is it?
It's not only limited to that property. This is just an example of a situation where this... that the changes, you know, by this bill will be implemented immediately for this property. But it could be in any area of the state. It's not just specific to this property.
Okay. And I guess I'm trying to figure out why it is that you can't do this without the bill.
Because in order to protect that estuarine land, is that we really need a forested buffer because there is forest activity immediately adjacent to it, and current land use laws would not allow legal tax loss if where the buffer zone area, the 300-foot buffer that we need to buy, is that we fall into an illegal tax loss. And we spent many hours with Lincoln County Planning Commission and Planning Director and Council. There's no way through lot line adjustments or repartitioning to reconfigure to do it. That's why.
How large are these parcels that, like, the track 2, which according to the map, is very small? How large of a parcel is that that I'm talking about?
The track 2, I don't have it right in front of me, but I think track 2 is maybe 25 acres. I mean, the whole purchase of all these properties is just short of 500 acres.
And it looks like the majority of that is in Tract 1?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay, anybody else have any other questions? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure I understand this. This is a willing seller, looks like to me. This allows the governing body to make different tax laws, tax lots, but it has to be a person selling land has to be willing to sell that land off for that purpose. The way if I'm reading this correctly, is that appropriate?
Correct. It will only be willing.
It's a willing seller situation.
Correct.
Okay.
Seeing no other questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2992? Seeing no one, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2992.
Can we open a work session?
I'm looking.
I'm willing to. chair.
That's most supportive.
Especially unless we have three votes for it, so.
Yeah, let's move.
Open a work session on House Bill 2992.
Move House Bill 2992.
Senator Atkinson has moved House Bill 2992A and Groves version to the floor, to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objections to the motion? Seeing none, so ordered.
The chair will carry.
Sure, I guess so.
That's good.
It's a well-oiled machine. That's all.
Close the work session on House Bill 2992 and 73. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2973.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2973 makes changes to forest smoke management program as a program functions. Adds to program functions the collection, analysis, and distribution of information regarding emissions from wildfires for comparison with prescribed burn, modifies function of Forest Smoke Management Advisory Committee, eliminates exemption from payment of registration fee for the burning of understory materials for forest health, creates combined minimum non-refundable registration fee for Class 1 forest lands.
We have Charlie Stone, Ray Wilkerson, Christina McNitt. One, two, three, you come up first, I guess. Who wants to go first? Charlie?
Sure. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Charlie Stone with the Department of Forestry Protection from Fire Program. House Bill 2973 makes some relatively minor policy changes to the Oregon Smoke Management Plan. This plan's been in effect for since 1969 as a voluntary program and since 1972 as a regulatory program. And periodically we update the program, hold reviews. The Department of Environmental Quality has to certify, or I'm not sure that's the right terminology, but has to submit a state implementation plan to EPA every 5 years, I believe it is, for compliance with the Clean Air Act, and this all kind of feeds into that that process. In 2002, we started a review process that went until about mid-2005, and that broad-based committee made 39 recommendations for improvements and changes to the smoke management plan. Most of those will result in changes in technology, procedures for the department, some rulemaking with the Board of Forestry. In fact, the bulk of it has rulemaking. But there were two bills that came out of the process. This one that deals with some policy elements, and House Bill 3468 that hopes to restore the funding mechanism for the smoke management plan that existed prior to the last major general fund shortfall. There are really two major effects of this bill. One is it requires the department to collect emissions data on wildfires. The reduction of wildfire through prescribed burning is a major means that we support and try to accomplish through prescribed burning, and reduces emissions overall, does it at the time of year and under the right conditions where the emissions aren't a significant health hazard to people. The other main effect of the bill is to adjust the fee structures that allows the Board of Forestry to have in rules, make it more efficient. Basically, right now, the statute requires that every month that somebody registers a burn or accomplishes a burn, we have to invoice them and bill them for that. And we've got a lot of invoices going out, a lot of collections coming in. We propose through rulemaking to enter into agreements with landowners and maybe do that only every 6 months or a year and make the whole system more efficient. So collecting wildfire data, making the collections more efficient, we hope you'll pass this bill out. I might point out that the emergency clause on the bill is so that rulemaking that the Board of Forestry will probably launch in June could include these fee structure changes in time to put them into effect for next spring attorney. Thank you.
Thank you. Ray, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ray Wilkerson, Oregon Forest Industries Council. I'm just here to put on the record OFIC's support for this bill. We participated in the work group that Charlie just described that developed the recommendations that led to this bill, and we support the work group's recommendations and the bill. Thank you.
Okay. Christina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, Christina McNitt representing Oregon Small Woodlands Association, ditto to that. We appreciate the department's time and effort, a three-year review process, and we were also at that table as stakeholders and support the recommendations and support the two bills before you today, and hopefully we'll be back talking about the funding for the smoke management portion as well.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Atkinson.
Thank you, Charlie. Page 2 of the bill, line 18. How am I supposed to figure where Jackson, Josephine counties are, maybe in Klamath County?
Chair Byer, Senator Atkinson, there's a definition in Chapter 477 of west of the summit of the Cascade Mountains, and it describes the counties that are west, and they include, so Jackson and Josephine counties are west of the summit of the Cascades in that definition. The reason for this language, I know you didn't ask that, but Hood River County is also described as west of the summit, but in all other respects in the past smoke management, we've treated Hood River County as eastern Oregon, and we want to continue to treat it as eastern Oregon. There's some differences in the fee structure and that type of thing, so that's the change in the language here.
Good question.
Well, I don't see how Hood River County is west.
Senator Byer, Senator Atkinson, depending on the statutes and the different programs in the state, Hood River County seems to get treated one way or the other depending on what the advantage is there, because the county rides right there on the crest of the Cascades. The forests in Hood River County are mostly typical or similar to western Oregon forests, whereas the rest of eastern Oregon is a lot drier. And so even though it is geographically it's east of the Cascades, but the forests are more similar to the western forests, and that's why it gets flipped back and forth in an awful lot of statutes.
Well, Senator Bates and I don't have the Cascades in southern Oregon. They don't go that far south. We have the Siskiyous that come up and turn north. We don't have the Cascades that go down that far. Just a definition for the record.
Well, actually, Mount Shasta is considered part of the Cascades, and Mount Lassen.
Jefferson's not. As soon as you get that thing made, I guess you can define it how you want.
but yes, the Siskiyous do.
That's right, Senator.
We're moving south here.
Charlie, I have a question about the minimum billing, not to exceed $30. Is that? Are you anticipating that not every time something happens, a minimum bill goes out, if it's less than that, it's going to be $30, but instead landowner does the registration, wants to register 20 acres, let's say, to burn, which for a small landowner would be a lot of burning in 1 year, and that's 50 cents per acre, that's a $10 bill. And then let's say they do that in March. Currently you send out a bill, and I pay these bills regularly. They're usually somewhere in that $2.50 to $10 range if you're registering 10, somewhere between 5 and 20 acres. And then if you can burn it sometime that year, either spring or fall, when it burns, you then pay the whatever, I guess it's $5, is that right now, once it's burned, or whatever the figure is. I think it's a cap of $5. I don't think it's actually that high today, is it?
It is currently.
It is, okay. So is that combined billing going to be for the whole cycle, or is it going to be a $30 bill to register and then another $30 bill after you burn?
Chair Byer, that'll be the subject of the Board of Forestry rulemaking, but it's our intent that if you paid the $30 for registration, and that would cover the whole cost of registration and accomplishment, you wouldn't be billed again.
What happens if I register it 1 year and I'm not able to burn it?
$30.
It would still be registered. That's another change that the rules will make. Currently, you have to re-register your burn every year. The record-keeping system has been upgraded. We can handle carryovers now, and the intent is that if you register it 1 year, you're good to be able to burn it on that registration for, I think, either two or three more years following that registration.
Okay. Any questions?
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bill Cooding.
Oh yeah, Charlie. I've had two people now ask about your lapel pin. I want to know if the committee had if there was five of them in your pocket.
Whoa, wait a minute.
No. Two Atkinson, three Beyer. Just how that.
Fair to answer your question directly, no, there are not five in my pocket.
No, I'm just kidding.
Most populated. Is there any?
Oh, it's
chief legislators for Smokey Bear.
Smokey Bear.
Go ahead, Bill. I'm at the House.
Thank you, Chair Beyer. Committee for the Record, Bill Cooding, Carpenters and Industrial Council. I like this bill, but I'd like to see it go a little bit further. This bill would be moot when we have the major forest fire that wipes out our forest. There's no smoke management on a forest fire. I work with Representative Dallum, on House Bill 2962, which incorporates a little program of creating a buffer zone between our state forest and our federal forest. I'd like to see this program looked at more intently. Hopefully I can resurrect this bill, but it'd do a couple things. It'd create some jobs, especially like in the Elliott Forest, such a valuable forest that is, and the funding goes directly to our schools. I'd like to see our forestry department sit down with our federal forest managers and take a long look at creating these buffer zones between our two forests. If it was done right, we could stop these major forest fires, or at least have a good chance of fighting them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Well, all I can say is from my own personal experience on the, when you get to the local level, the firefighters at the local levels, at least in the North Cascade District, work very closely with their federal partners in trying to stop the forest fires. I know that doesn't happen as good all over the state, but Bill, you'd be happy to know the relationship, at least in the North Cascade District, is very good between the federal and the state firefighters.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Anybody else like to testify on the bill? Seeing no one, we'll close the public hearing. Open work session on House Bill 2793.
Mr. Chair, I would be delighted to move, even without the State of Jefferson Amendment, House Bill 2973 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved House Bill 2973 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, does this have to go to Ways and Means because there's a fee in it, or can we move it directly to the floor?
I don't think
no subsequent referral. No.
There is no subsequent referral. There is not a new fee. The fee is existing law.
No, just changing a fee. We're just adding a minimum fee to it.
Yeah,
I prefer going directly to the floor, Mr. Chair. We're making things work faster.
We had several of these early in the session, too, where we had fee bills that went straight to the floor, and there's no subsequent referral on this one.
Let's just send it on. Okay. Before we vote, I will declare a potential conflict of interest as I routinely annually pay those fees to the Department of Forestry for burning forest land. Is there any other discussion? Any objections to the motion? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Brzezinski, would you like to carry it?
Yep.
And close the work session and open a public hearing on House Bill 3043.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3043 authorizes the state forester to impose a civil penalty in an amount equal to the estimated cost of reforesting land for violation of ORS 527.745 related to reforestation, and to use the penalties to reforest the land that is subject to the violation. Any penalties that exceed the cost of reforestation are to be paid to the general fund.
Ted Warrenson, Ray Wilkinson, and Christina McNett.
Sounds like a folk band. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I'm Ted Lawrence, Assistant State Forester with the Oregon Department of Forestry. This bill basically allows us to change the cap for civil penalties, which currently is $5,000, and to make that equal to the amount that we'd estimate for the cost of reforestation, which would allow for those folks that really are trying to fight the process to be penalized up front, the cost of what reforestation would be, to create an incentive to allow us to get the work done, as opposed to us having to wait for the period in terms of the repair order. And if we were to ultimately do the work, it would be a lien against the property, and oftentimes the landowner would be changed by then, and all sorts of problems come with that. So this puts the penalty up front, allows us to create a real incentive for the landowner to want to reforest, as opposed to putting things off. We have found, due to change in resources and other issues, that we are seeing increasing issues around reforestation, and the forest landowners have real concern about that problem, that the problem has become more visible, particularly in certain parts of the state. And we work together to identify some options that might help address this and create some new tools, and this is what we came up with. We believe this will be very helpful in the process.
Any questions? Thank you, Ray.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Ray Wilkerson, Oregon Forest Industries Council, here in support of House Bill 3043. We view the reforestation requirements as probably the most important part of the Oregon Forest Practices Act, both in terms of maintaining the long-term productivity of the forest land, but also in terms of maintaining public acceptance of forest management. Clearly, our practices are subject to intense public scrutiny. There's a lot of portions of members of the public who are, don't view logging as in a very favorable light, but as long as they're assured, we've learned over the years that those lands that are logged are going to be reforested to grow a new forest. The public accepts forest management, even the parts of it that they don't like as much as other parts. So both for that reason and for the productivity of the land and perpetuity, the reforestation laws are very, very important. And as Mr. Lawrence indicated, this department's resources to ensure that enforcement has been stretched in recent years, and this bill allows or creates another tool for them to be able to make sure that that doesn't continue. So appreciate your time, and hope you can support this bill.
Questions? Christina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, for the record, Christina McNitt, representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. We support House Bill 3043, but take it very seriously, recognizing the fact that ultimately the person paying the penalty is the landowner. And we're supporting this bill in cooperation with the Department of Forestry because we fully recognize their lack of resources to enforce the Forest Practices Act, which is our social contract with the public, who has an expectation that when they drive by forests and they see them, they know that they're growing, planted, raised, and harvested to certain standards that protect public resource values. That being said, it is very important, and I'll segue a little bit again, that we support the Department of Forestry, not just in administrative issues like this, but also in their budget, so they get stewardship foresters on the land. And we make sure that the Department of Forestry doesn't become, instead of a department facilitating the Forest Practices Act through stewardship foresters on the ground with our type of landowners, that it instead tips over to become a regulatory agency. That's not the history that we've had in the state of Oregon, but I think we're getting close to that, and it's very concerning to our members. So we are working in concert with the department and recognize the need for this bill and to protect the Forest Practices Act, and hope that we can support the department as well in recovering those stewardship forester positions.
Thank you. Ted, how are you going to figure what you think the cost is going to be for restocking?
Chair Beyer, we've got pretty good records and data on what the relative costs of reforestation are by kind of components: vegetation control, planning, site preparation, and follow-up vegetation treatments if needed. And so we've got pretty good track record on doing that for our own lands, as well as the information we provide to landowners in terms of technical assistance. So I think we could make a pretty good estimate. It may not be perfect, but it's going to be pretty close.
And what level of restocking will you look to the forest practices minimum?
The forest practices standard would be what we'd target, yes, that's correct.
Okay. Under current law, with the $5,000 per violation language, could you go in and actually assess more than that in a flagrant violation like this, by even to the point of saying that every tree severed in a clear cut could be a separate violation if you haven't restocked?
Chair Beyer, the forest practice does allow treatment of trees that are severed, like in buffer zones that are required to be treated as individual things in certain cases, but in a reforestation that wouldn't be the case. So the $5,000 cap would apply. There's just one violation there.
Okay, so it would be a violation would be per operating permit. Is that how it is when you're talking about a logging unit?
Chair Beyer, no, it could be, I'm trying to think of an example. We had one case where there was a written plan required for bald eagle nest as well as the replacement trees and roost trees for that thing, and the landowner flagrantly harvested those trees. In that particular case, we were able to address those trees individually as a violation since they were part of a plan, each one. But with reforestation, it doesn't work that way. It'd be a reforestation violation on the operation itself.
So that's my point, is when reforestation, an operation of 10 acres, 20 acres, 40 acres, you file one operator's permit to do that, so it would be one violation. Because
that's correct.
I see. Okay. Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Close. Anybody else want to talk about House Bill 3043? Okay, no one. Close the public hearing. Open the work session on House Bill 3043.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 3043 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved House Bill 3043 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Any objections to the motion? None. So ordered. You want to carry that? Any volunteers? Senator Bates will be the carrier. Close the work session on House Bill 3043.
What's that?
Senator Vakian, any other business for the committee?
I think we're done. It's clear. Good work.
Committee adjourned.
Thanks, Roger.
Thank you.